Welcome to the Millionaire Mindcast, where we broadcast weekly interviews with millionaire minds from across the globe to empower you on your journey of unlocking a rich and fulfilling life. It's time to unleash your millionaire within. Now, here's your host, Matty A.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back. I got another amazing guest for you, and I told you I was going to bring some heavy-hitting women into the podcast the next few weeks, and I have a great guest for you guys today, Miss Cody Sanchez. She is a millennial badass, first and foremost. I always love seeing millennials out there crushing it in their space, and her story is actually really unique. She has, you know, been a global entrepreneur, which we haven't had many of those on the show, and she has really found her niche in a space that, according to her, and I'm sure, you know, many can see why this is probably a challenge, is that, you know, this is a space that not many women have broken into. And as a father of two little daughters who I just want to see take over the world, I'm all about the woman power. I am all about seeing, you know, just individuals in general, you know, sex aside, who deserve to be where they're at, get that recognition, get those opportunities, and to just completely crush, you know, any barriers or hurdles that are put in front of them. And Cody's one of those individuals, and she really dives into, you know, her story of how she has been faced with a lot of these challenges, also her family history and the background there, and how that has really set her up to win, and how that has inspired her to, you know, take on some of these mountains and climb some of these peaks in a way that, you know, most people might have shied away from. And you're going to see this girl has some insane grit. I met her at a One Life Fully Live conference about a year ago, and was up on a panel with her, and I was also moderating and just asking questions, and she is as sharp as they come, but she's also real and candid, and she knows what she's talking about. So she has a career that she has carved out in investments and global investing, but also has tied in this social entrepreneurship and aspect of it as well. So I'm really excited for you guys to get to hear what she has to say today in this interview. She brought the fire. We're not going to waste any more time, but if you're new to the show, welcome. I appreciate you checking it out. If you're an aspiring millionaire, if you're an employee, if you're someone who's just kind of dabbling in entrepreneurship, whatever it may be, this is all about adopting the mentality and the mindset that will obviously get you to living like a millionaire, but more importantly, living like a millionaire in all the areas of your life. It's not just about having those seven figures in your bank account. It's all about living like a millionaire in the other pillars of life that are important for living a wealthy, healthy, generous life. So, with that being said, if you want some reading material, I always love to offer an item of value. We have compiled the top 50 millionaire recommended reads. You can get that at matthaitchison.com and download that for free. Many other free resources there, so be sure to check out the website, show notes and links of all the other episodes and interviewees there as well. Or you can just text the word millionaire books, all one word, no spaces or it won't work, millionaire books to 44222. It'll ask you for your email. Send your email back and it'll pop that PDF right into your inbox so you can get your mind in the right place, because that's ultimately the foundation that all of this wealth, all of this lifestyle, all of this freedom is going to be created from and where it's going to be unlocked. So with that being said, feel free to download the resource. If you haven't reviewed the podcast yet, be sure to do that. This is, you know, a free podcast, guys, and the way that I continue to reach more people, to reach people like you, to reach people who are really seeking this kind of information and content, it's through organic search traffic in iTunes. So if you leave a review there, I'd be greatly appreciative. With that being said, let's dive into the interview with Miss Cody Sanchez. Welcome into the show today, Cody Sanchez. What's going on, girl?
How are you, Matt? I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, last we connected, I was facilitating a panel that you were on for being a badass entrepreneur who is just crushing it in their space, specifically also being a millennial and having the track record that you had. I think, well, I know for me personally speaking, reading through your bio and all of the success you've had, I was just, you know, flat out impressed. But more so when I actually got to connect with you and some of the real conversations that we had, is you are someone that not only is just crushing it in your space and you're relentless and going after, you know, the achievement of those goals, but you're also very, very big in how you give back and you share and you empower other people, which I just absolutely love. And it seems like it's kind of a common thread amongst a lot of the younger generations who really want to share and support and serve at a high level, but also get out there and crush your goals. So for the people of the Millionaire Mindcast that don't know who you are, what Cody Sanchez is up to, how the heck she got to where she's at today, give us a quick little synopsis of your entrepreneurial journey and what got you started and kind of, you know, what led you to where you're at right now.
Sure. Well, I think probably the most important part is I've never been very good at coloring inside the lines, Matt. So if there was anything that mandated a 1-2-3-step process that really tried to categorize you or keep you inside of one box, I just naturally fought against that when I was young. And to this day, you know, I'm in my parents' home, so my childhood home right now, actually in Arizona. And so we were talking with all of my grandparents, and they were telling stories about, you know, my first interactions with them. And it turns out I was like kind of a hellion handful since I was 3 years old when I was like, you know, telling my grandfather F words and stuff. And he's like, where did you learn that? You know, I was a total nightmare. So, and I like that, you know, I threw my first protest when I was 15 in high school, actually against our school, and had the radio stations come out, and we wanted some different types of classes. And so, before I ever talk about anything I do or have done, I always preface it with, you know, I don't have any sort of secret sauce, any crazy intellect. I certainly have plenty of luck and a great network, but I think more than anything else, it's that I have like that little subversive gene inside of me that just says, when somebody says something is absolutely impossible, I kind of grin and I like it. And so, you know, that's led me to do some cool stuff. So my background is I had quite a large international investment business in Latin America. I sit as a venture partner at a venture fund called Magma Partners. I have sort of spoken around the country and around Latin America and Canada about how to build businesses that you love, about how to get VC funding, about how to raise billions of dollars. I've done the more traditional route of Goldman Sachs and Georgetown and, you know, climbing my way up through the financial ladder. And then I'm kind of in this mix now between the investment landscape and the idea of startups and this really cool space we have today, which is like the media at our fingertips. We can all be producing content and creating when I'm in my parents' childhood home, and Matt, maybe you're like in between, you know, flipping six-figure houses or whatever it is.
Yeah, right. So that's awesome. You're very humble, because that didn't even scratch the surface of some of the things that you've done and that I've, you know, learned just impressively that you've, you know, accomplished all in your 20s, that I want to preface. And I love to hear more about, obviously, your track record's great, right? But there's a lot, especially in the financial sector, there's a lot of mm-hmm. barriers to break through and go around. And to see what you've done in this massive landscape, I'd love to unpack that a little bit and get a better feeling for how you were able to break into this sector and this space, and how you were able to take this global, right? Because you're multilingual, correct?
Correct.
And
yep, Spanish, English, and Portuguese.
Okay. And did you study to go to school for this, or how did you fall into this path?
Yeah, well, fall's a good word. I think certainly luck favors the prepared. And so I've always been the type to jump on opportunity, never been the type to actually been able to script out my life plan as I'd like to. I think there are some people that just, you know, they said, I want to be an astronaut my whole entire life, and so I'm going to work through it to become an astronaut. And I'm actually really the opposite. I learn through kind of screwing up. So every time I make a mistake, I'm like, oh, I don't really like that. So on to the next thing. And I haven't figured out a way to not learn through quote unquote failing or figuring out things I don't like. That's sort of my process. And so where this all started is I graduated a year early out of college, and I went to Arizona State for undergrad. you know, my father didn't have an opportunity to go to college. He and his family are Latino, and so they were immigrants. And so I was very lucky to get to go to college. And that's something that he didn't have the opportunity to do. But my last year of college, I graduated early, and I was a journalist along the U.S.-Mexico border. And at the time, we were writing really just trying stories about human struggle and strife that if we're Americans, we don't really understand
right.
in these, you know, emerging market lenses, right? And so we wrote this one story and we got some awards. We got a grant from the Howard Buffett Foundation, so Warren Buffett's son, to write this story. And then we won the JFK Award for print journalism. And the only reason I think we won any of those is because we just followed our curiosity, which is what I always tell others to do when they're looking for their thing, their jam, their life calling instead of career or job, is follow the things that you're curious about and like be a little Alice in Wonderland, like just go down the rabbit hole and things shake out, right? And so so we wrote this last story, won these awards, and then we came back to give the awards to these people in the town called Agua Prieta. And in my naivete at, I don't know, 20 years old or something like that, I'm all excited. I'm giving them prizes and awards and little, you know, things. And one of the women in it, she had gone through real difficulty, and she said to me, you know, oh, Cody, this is so great. Now that everybody knows what's happening to us, you're going to fix it. Right? Like America's going to come in and you're going to fix this and things are going to change. And I had to say, like, no, you know, sadly, that's not how it works in journalism. So the way that I got to finance was actually realizing that I don't want to write people's stories. I want to rewrite them.
Wow.
And I thought, well, how could you do that? Yeah, you've got to understand power. And I think power, the only language that every country, religion, group speaks is green, and it's monetary. And so I figured that I would figure out how to find my way through finance, maybe start to understand this language of power, and then I could rewrite stories instead of just write about them.
That's amazing. So you didn't go to school for finances, like numbers wasn't your jam, it wasn't your background. So going into this space, how were you able to break into it for one and not just survive in the space, but actually excel, to thrive, right? Because you have now really created this vast landscape of connections and network, $1 billion raised with a B, right? Not many people can say that in their career, let alone in their 20s. So I want to kind of get a better picture of how someone who didn't have a background in something bridged the gap and not only crossed the bridge, but then made it their jam, made it their space and blew it up.
Yeah. Well, have you ever done jujitsu or any sort of hand-to-hand combat?
Martial arts. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. So in jujitsu and most types of hand-to-hand combat or martial arts, you think about how you start off as an amateur. As an amateur, you typically start off like pounding, hammering, like really trying to strengthen muscle things, right? Because that's how you're taught as a young person that if it's not really difficult and if it's not really hard, you're not going to be able to knock this other person on the ground or whatever the case may be.
Right.
And then you realize in jiu-jitsu that actually that's the opposite of what you want to be doing. You're looking for leverage points, inflection points. You're looking for the fulcrum on which to place your lever. And once you find that in martial arts, which I think everybody should do because it's kind of like chess with the body, once you find that, you realize like, oh, if I just tweak this little way, I can knock over somebody that's four times my size and I'm not even sweating. It's so easy. You have to do it to believe that it's possible, right?
Totally.
And so I did the same thing in my career. I looked for where is my leverage point? Where is my niche? And what I mean by that would be, I'm a woman, right? My last name is Sanchez. I'm a Latina. And in an industry like finance, those two things are kind of rare, right? And so that might be a leverage point for me. So what I did is I started going to a ton of women in finance, Latinos in finance, minorities in finance. You know, I went to one conference that was just like Latino business leaders, and I started leveraging what I thought my niche was to find a way into one of these companies. Mm. And I leveraged it again and again and again, because I know that in the US, Latinos are the biggest minority, they're the fastest growing, and they have largely the fastest growing buying power. And so I leveraged that niche. And then, you know, once I got into finance, those two things really helped me open up a lot of doors. And I started layering on top of that. So it wasn't enough to be a woman or a Latina anymore. It was like, okay, well, maybe I could be this really traditional, you know, financial person with Georgetown and Goldman on my resume, but I could also be adventure seeking. I could be interesting. I could have a media platform. I could be a little bit more straight talking as opposed to, well, you know, today we think that the economy perhaps could go up. It could perhaps go down and we're just not absolutely sure. It depends upon the stimulation, right? So I could speak like that, or I could be like, listen, yeah, I could talk about jujitsu and I could use synonym. I could use analogies. And so I think for your listeners, that's what I would say is, where's your leverage point? I think it was Archimedes who said, give me a lever long enough and a fulcrum on which to place it and I can move the world.
Yep.
And so I'm always looking for how could I do it easier and what's uniquely inside of me that may even seem like a detriment. Because people would say, well, women are paid, Latinos are paid less. So you could look at it negatively, or you could say, nobody looks like me. And so I'm going to think of this as a leverage point as opposed to a detriment.
I love that. The reframe coming in clutch there. And obviously it served you at a really high level. I'm always curious to know what you, the individual, thinks your superpower is. What is your strength that you constantly double down on a daily basis, entrepreneurial, professionally, one of each, either or, that serves you at the highest level today, and obviously moving forward?
Mine are twofold. I think it's action and creation. And so I try in every instance that I can, when something scares me, I do it anyways. When I feel fearful, I absolutely do it. When I'm feeling anxious or anxiety ridden, I act. And it seems like action pushes through fear for me always. And then if I not only act, but I act in order to produce or create something, then that fear actually turns into something tangible, into production. And so I think my superpower is I'm scared all the time. I do it anyways. And I'm always feeling analysis by paralysis, which I think we all do. We have so many options these days, so many inputs coming at us. But I create anyways with where I'm at, with what I know. I do what I can.
I love it. And what was that big aha or that big kind of moment in your early on career where you're like, wow, like I'm going to do some big things in this space, and the opportunities, the doors, the potential felt limitless?
So I think it was actually the opposite for me. So frequently for me, it's been when I've been told no.
Ah.
So when somebody says, you can't do this, you know, it's not impossible, but for you it is. You're not enough. You're not good enough. You can't, whatever. I wish I was one of those people that had a great immediate response back. I don't always, but it sits inside me like a little splinter that I can't help but sort of pick at and pick at and pick at until I eventually take action. And so I can recall explicitly, and I don't know if you can relate or people listening can, but I was at an investment firm, my very first one. And I didn't have a mathematical background, like you said. I didn't really like math. My math teacher actually, this is kind of inappropriate, but he said it, not me. But he told me in high school that Helen Keller had more of a chance of winning an archery contest than I did at being in finance. Swear to God.
What a dick.
So that kind of stuck with me. And then I was at my first finance company, and I felt like I wasn't good enough. I couldn't keep up with everybody else. You know, it was a ton of Ivy List kids, and I went to a state school because, you know, I didn't even know you could apply and study for the SATs and those kind of things. I had no idea when I was younger. And so I came up with an idea, Matt, for a business that I thought really made sense. Our company at the time wasn't doing things internationally. I saw this really big grind segment because I had that inflection point I talked to you about. So I came up with a job. And I was like, gosh, we should start this business. You know, I can do it. You don't have to pay me anymore. I'll take it on in tandem with everything else I'm doing. And I presented it to my boss. And he took the idea and he was like, huh, this is kind of interesting. Went back to his superiors, whatever, took the thing. He's like, you know what? Calls me back down to the office a couple hours later. And he's like, you know, if you take this job, you're going to have to move to Philadelphia. You've got to, you know, do all these different things. You need to be ready to go in 3 months. And I'm like, you know, Ron was his name. I'm like, Ron, I got it. I'm your girl. No problem. I call up my mom. I'm like, Mom, I'm leaving. I got to go. We got to start packing everything. I got this new gig. She's like, oh God, Cody. Okay, whatever. And so Ron calls me back down a few hours later and I sit across from Ron. And I'm so excited. I can barely contain it. And he's like, Cody, what do you think your peers think about you? I'm like, what? I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, I thought we were going to talk about the job. What's happening? And he's like, we were in a group, but we were an accelerated development program. So it was 15 super high performing, just out of college grads, all working in different areas of the country. Company rotating through. So this group of 15 people, he's like, well, they think that you would leave dead bodies behind to get ahead. I was like, oh, what?
How do they know me?
I'm like, I know. Well, then
have they been reading my journal?
Yeah, I'm like, just because my last name is Sanchez, you guys are making, you know, accusations. I don't know. So he says that, and at the time I'm a young woman and I don't know much, so I'm trying not to cry, you know, when you have those tough feedback sessions and you're like, oh, just keep it together.
Yeah.
So, moral of the story, he says to me that feedback kind of explains why, like, I wasn't very good at going out with the rest of the team or party planning or going to lunch with them. I was always working because I didn't think that I could keep up with everybody if I didn't do that. And so he took the job, they created the position, and they gave it to another member of our 15-person group. Wow. And I was just heartbroken. Yeah. And in that instance, I could have, I think, had two lives. Could have had the life I have now, or I could have been a perpetual victim, right? I could have said, well, he did this to me. This wasn't fair. And instead I said, Cody, what did you do that allowed this to happen? How did you not sell as much internally in the company as externally? Because in life, I think you have three options in any situation that happens to you. You can change your behavior. So change, you know, the actions that are happening, change the way you feel about what's happening, or play the perpetual victim. So change your behavior, change your feelings, or play the perpetual victim. And thankfully, for some reason, I said, I'm not a victim. Only I get to choose if somebody makes me into a victim or not. And I decided, okay, I'm going to learn how to play more nicely in the sandbox. And I'm going to take this opportunity and never allow my ideas to be stolen by somebody else again.
Mm. It always seems like I can relate, the challenges, the adversities often become our advantages if we choose to see it that way, right? And I love that you kind of, this is some same thing that I do all the time, or when we're having a conflict resolution conversation, is where is my DNA on this situation? Because it's always easiest and usually our natural response to point the finger and look externally instead of inviting the opportunity of growth internally first and foremost, which I love that you did that, because obviously it has served you really at a high level moving forward. And it's something that I'm guessing you probably utilize in every conflict resolution situation now.
I do. I still don't like conflict. I'm sure. I don't know anybody that really does. I've tried to train myself to just get into it more so I can get over not liking it. But I think that too often we play the victim, and I don't think it serves us. And of course we all want to be taken care of, and we want to have, you know, the white knight in shining armor come and save us as any type of human, man, woman, or otherwise. You want somebody to help you along the way. But in fact, if you do the Tony Robbins, life happens for you and not to you. It sounds cliche, but it works, huh?
Isn't it funny how a lot of the most cliched statements are so true, and they do totally work?
Yeah, well, I think it's common sense, but it's not common practice. Mm. And I'm sure you're the same way, but I am fascinated by why do people not achieve the lives that they want.
Yes.
What stops people from living amazing lives? Why do we fall short? And I, you know, in the US, this is probably controversial, but I don't think you have any excuse.
Zero.
If you are living in a third world, yeah, right? If you're in a third world country and you're born into abject poverty and there's no Wi-Fi and there's no electricity, you know what? I don't have a solution for that. But if you're born in the US with the circumstances around you, why don't people achieve it? And I think it's got to be a mixture of fear, a mixture of lack of self-esteem, and a mixture of you realize what's inside of you, and then it gets like uneducated. You get told you're not capable. You get told it'll never work, and you for some reason listen to that as opposed to say, you know what, if I just keep grinding, something's gonna work.
Yeah, it's so true. If you think about it, I mean, a lot of my travels to third world countries make me come back and feel so grateful and also so stupid for some of the stuff that I complain about, right? Sometimes. And I always try and check myself on complaining and negativity and that kind of stuff, right? And yet it's around us all the time. So we are exposed to it. You can obviously fall victim to it, but it just makes you realize, especially hearing some of the success stories of people who have had far less with way more challenging circumstances, and yet they find a way to thrive and to, you know, create opportunity and to build these massive networks and to not only make a lot of financial gains in their life, but to just live these fulfilled lives that impact them, their families, their communities, the countries they come from. And we are in the US at the end of the day, in the big picture of the world, the 1%, right? We're all living a 1% lifestyle. Now there's the people living the 0.00001% of the, you know, of the wealth spectrum. But at the end of the day, if you're in the US, you live a 1% lifestyle, and you have no excuse for why you cannot go out and create, you know, a life on your terms, a life by design. So you were
totally
kind of
great.
Cruising into your space, and obviously, you know, I always call them the majestic failures, constantly failing forward. Those are the best learning lessons
that
lead you to the next stepping stone of life or the next stepping stone of opportunity. And obviously it's not failure unless it's final, right? Unless you stop and you quit, whatever it may be. But you were getting into your space and having some major success. And then I love the fact that, you know, personal development has been a big part of your journey, and now you're speaking and you're still doing. So help people understand what is your current kind of focus and you know, day-to-day look like right now, in addition to obviously you have a very well-recognized personal brand in not only the entrepreneurial space of inspiring women and power players that are females, but also obviously just in general, a motivational, inspirational speaker. Tell us what those two parallels look like and how you have them working together in this journey instead of just feeling like you have to be one or the other.
Sure. Well, that's a huge pressure. And I think people push back a lot when you're multifaceted. They don't like it. It's much easier to just say, I'm an attorney.
Niche down and that's you. That's your identity. No more.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think it's hard to push back on it, but you have a moral imperative too, because any sort of successful monetarily human has multiple streams of income, period. And so I think it is a major problem that our corporate ecosystem mandates one income stream being your salary. It's actually like really fiscally irresponsible because a company gets bought and or a company goes bankrupt, or a new product emerges, and you have no fallback. That's really a wrong thing to do to your employees, in my opinion. And so I've pushed back on that almost my entire career. And it's very hard to do in finance because we're hugely regulated. And so people say to me constantly, you know, Cody, you know, you got to watch what you say. There's lots of things I can and can't do. And there's a lot of downside to speaking out and getting a name, because then people are watching you and they're looking for you to trip up.
Yeah. Targets on the back.
And exactly. And I remember one of my bosses said that to me at one point. He's like, you're putting a big target on yourself. And I kind of paused and I had to ask, why? What do you mean? He's like, well, if people know you and you know what, and they know what you're doing. I'm like, well, hopefully I'm doing the right stuff.
Right.
And if I'm doing the right stuff, then I have to have a belief that being out there and having a face is a good thing. So to answer your question, I sort of have three buckets. My first business focus is an asset management firm. So that's where the $1 billion comes from. We have big institutional clients in Latin America and the US that have international assets. And so we go around helping pensions, sovereign wealth funds, governments, huge companies like Apple and Facebook invest their money. And I consult with them on how to do that. So that's my biggest business. Then the second bucket is really this startup venture capital space. I'm fascinated by this new-ish asset class, which is investing in early stage companies. And so with that, I do some work down south with Magma Partners, and I do some work investing in, I've had 24 companies now in my investment portfolio. And within that range, I do a lot of working with accelerators, speaking at incubators, talking about how to grow internationally, how to do sales in your business. And then the third bucket is really this multimedia bucket, which would be speaking, blogging, interviewing, podcasting, social media, all of those things. And that one's really much more inspirational. So it's much more, why to build the life that you should. And then you get into some tactics as well. But it's hopefully showing, hey, there's a girl that kind of looks like me, or maybe she's also struggled and I've had struggles in my life too. And so if she can do it, she doesn't seem that smart. I can do it, And that's the thought with the three buckets.
I love it. I love the fact that you have a little diversity in each one. And I personally think nowadays it's critical to have an outward facing brand where you do have a face and people yeah. can connect with you, whether you are the brand or you're the mascot of the brand, or you're just one of the band members behind the brand. It's important to have your own voice, your own, followership, your own content. And I love that you've brought that into the financial sector and the financial space. So you guys are, you have your three different buckets that you're focusing on. And I'm curious, before we kind of move on from, your previous journey to talking a little bit more about this financial space, is what is your take on being that you're in global finance, the idea of cryptocurrency in some of these different financial markets, especially the markets that were, their finances were irresponsibly managed by their government or the trusted parties in their markets. I'm curious on your take on that.
Yeah, well, I think there's two themes there, right? There's the price of some of the cryptocurrencies right now.
Yep.
And how people are utilizing them as investment vehicles. And then there's the underlying technology of blockchain. So I kind of separate the two because I have a really visceral reaction to all of these guys who are out there like, buy this currency, buy that. Crypto's going to be, or Bitcoin's going to be at $100,000. Absolutely may be true. I have no idea. I think Bitcoin has just as much likelihood to go to 100K as it does to zero.
Right.
And so I do not think people should be putting their, all of their savings in there. And what's funny though is, I'm a contrarian. So I find the whole thing fascinating, this idea of sort of upending the financial system. I think there's a way to profit on it, no doubt. I just have a personal model of only investing in the things that I understand.
Got it.
So I invested in some of the currencies early, when they were $1,500 or something, but just enough to where I would be annoyed if I lost it. And also it wouldn't change my life one bit
right.
if I lost it all.
Yeah.
And that's all I did.
I like that because I think it's just interesting to me to hear. More so, obviously, the conversation seems loud in the U.S. because, it's a little bit more common. But, I'm curious to know on what some of the other, markets around the world are kind of looking at this in respect to not just being, another stock market type opportunity or, an investment vehicle, but also a future of them and their family and how they have more control. And if it's being adopted, if it's still looked at as this, polarizing or this, taboo-ish type talk, being that you're plugged into some of these channels a little bit more, I was just curious if, any of those conversations are coming up in your kind of closed room talks?
Well, definitely any of the countries that are experiencing economic turmoil. So Argentina, Venezuela, Cuba historically, even countries like Brazil now, where you've had high inflation, and you could earn a dollar, and by the end of the day, that dollar is worth half of what it was when you earned it. That, like you said, means that people don't trust their governments anymore. They've absolutely mishandled their finances. And so in those countries, cryptocurrency is really widespreadly used as a mechanism to get money out of the country. So you can do it on a little USB drive.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's really hard to track, obviously, which countries do that.
Yeah.
But China is obviously a massive player in that space. And if I was a Venezuelan or an Argentinian, I can't blame them. I would do the same thing. So I think governments are paying attention to it. And certainly their citizens in those countries are saying, they've always actually said that they don't trust the local currency. They've just had to buy hard assets instead. So, you know, a lot of my clients would have to buy a ton of real estate in Miami, right? And now they might just take a small file out of Argentina and put it in another,
right,
in a Swiss bank account. But, you know, it's also in those countries, it's a lot about safety, about, you know, in Mexico, if people know that you have hundreds of millions of dollars, what could happen to your family?
Right.
So I think cryptocurrency will continue to play a role from an anonymity standpoint. And that's probably a large reason why the price has gone so much, is people are willing to pay for privacy.
Yep.
But I'm even more interested in how blockchain is going to disrupt finance in general.
Yep. Well, if you think about it, pretty much any major industry, it's going to be a disruptor. And it's already, you know, doing just that. But it's really interesting to talk about it in the context of the financial sector and what that's going to look like, being that this power, you know, house, this juggernaut that essentially controls, you know, every single person's life, their livelihood, their future, their freedom, how they feel, what they wake up to go do every day, right? A lot of that is dictated through the financial sector and the opportunities in the financial sector. And one of the conversations that you and I talked about before the interview, which I think we're seeing at the end of the day, statistically, more and more people are going to work for themselves. More and more people are, quote unquote, becoming entrepreneurs. They're going into business for themselves. And I think, you know, us as millennials, we've seen our parents go through a lot of financial turbulence outside of their control, right? And you see a lot of the previous generations can totally relate to that. So current generations and future generations, I think, will see, it'll make a whole lot more sense to go, hey, I'm going to let it ride on my shoulders, not on somebody else's shoulders. And so more and more people are going into business for themselves. And you and I have talked a lot about, you know, this conversation too, which is contrarian business models. For those that don't understand what that is, what does that mean to you? And why is it such an interesting topic of conversation? How is it applicable to what's going on right now and moving into the future?
Sure. Well, I have an issue with the idea that you aren't compensated for your output, you're compensated for your time input, right? And so this idea of a 9-to-5 workplace, I kind of struggle with this idea, because I think that if my team is quantitatively proven to bring in more money, to create more, to produce more, and we're just an A team, and we do it in half the time of a B team, I think that should be a positive, and we should be able to have that extra half of our time to live our lives, and to have those interesting cross-pollination opportunities that come together when just like Steve Jobs, when you take a calligraphy course in tandem with a Swedish, you know, design manufacturing input in tandem with, you know, a focus on code and computers, something beautiful emerges. And I still think, as much as we're talking about it, there are very few companies that really put their money where their mouth is on this idea of, we're going to compensate you for what you produce, not how long you're at your desk. And I think one of my favorite ones is Netflix. You know, if you've ever read the Netflix HR policy presentation, the PowerPoint's amazing. And it's really simplistic, but basically they talk about the same model that, who was it? I think it was The Small Prince, where they said, I'm going to mess up the quote, but it's something along the lines of, you know, if you want to build a boat, you don't tell the boat builders to go cut down trees, bring in tools, and organize. you teach the boat builders to yearn for the vast and open sea. And so I love that philosophy of, so can we just teach instead, can we teach people to strive for success and to strive for production and to love that high, as opposed to wrap them in so many processes that we become big brother, you know, 1984 Orwellian in the way that we manage people. And so contrarian business models are exactly that. How can you create massive cash flow because there's no honor in poverty, and at the same time have a lot of freedom? And I think some, this business model is starting to emerge more and more. You're seeing it with Richard Branson, has done this for decades. You're seeing it with some of these, you know, multimedia sort of mavens like a Ferris and a James Altucher. And I think you're starting to see it with companies like, you know, Netflix saying, we're going to expect a lot of you production wise, but if you can outsource it intelligently, if you can create and produce more, we're not going to wring every drop of your life out of you in order for us to make up for B-level performance.
I love it. I think it's brilliant. And at the end of the day, it's inclusive, right? And so it gives people some DNA in the process of what not only the outcome is going to be, but also how you're going to get there. And instead of it being, like you said, this X's and O's, you know, type framework, it's a blank canvas and we know where we're going. Yeah. And collectively we can create something together that may be done a whole lot more efficiently and productively than if we were to put it in this box and say, this is how it has to be. So I think it's a brilliant idea, especially when we're talking about mind bending, you know, earth altering type projects and products and services that are being put out there today. So what are some of the most important mindset strategies or disciplines, or maybe even just routine type habits that you see other people that you're modeling after or that you're doing on a daily basis that you feel is imperative for a successful, productive, you know, professional career and obviously personal life as well?
Sure. Well, you know, David Osborne as well. He's part of your crew. And so I just saw him in Austin a couple of weeks ago and we were chatting and, you know, and he said something that I loved, which was you either work for, equity or you work for knowledge. He says he works for equity and or knowledge, and most people work for money, right? They don't think about the other two. And I think that's a major issue. And what he means by that is, you know, the people who create massive generational wealth are people who have equity or some sort of percentage ownership of the company, and or the people who take the job that they have and leverage the knowledge that they got from it in order to create something else. Mm-hmm. You don't actually ever create generational wealth from a 9-to-5. You know, Merrill Lynch's CEO has said that for years. There's sort of, I think it's 5 ways to create massive wealth. So you can inherit it, you can marry it, you can be in real estate, your business, you can create a company, or you can create a fund, an investment fund. Those are the 5 real ways that you can have generational wealth. And I think it's scary for people to think, oh man, how do I go from being an employee to one of those, you know, 5 things? Things, especially real estate, creating a company or building a fund. Those are sort of hard to do theoretically. Yeah. So my commentary is always, I don't think everybody should be an entrepreneur right off the bat. I think it's really, really hard to make the same amount of money you can make as an employee as an entrepreneur off the bat. You need to save up a pretty solid amount of cash, I think, because I don't ever want to have to be short-term thinking and my business because I don't have enough money to ease pressure on myself. I don't operate well in that situation. I don't think most people do.
Right.
And so I'm really big on, can you find companies instead that you can work for that allow you to have outside interests? And so while you're working at the company and getting your paycheck and learning, then create your side hustle. If you already have a huge trust fund, what are you doing working for somebody else? You should definitely be figuring out what your curiosity leads you to. But I think, you know, most people that I know that are successful started with a side hustle. They started with something. I mean, even Jeff Bezos, right? So, you know, he was working in finance, making $1 million a year, and then decided, no, I'm going to go start an online bookstore. Like, really?
Come on.
So, and even, yeah, I know. Right? Well, you can imagine people said that to him, but he was intelligent enough to have a cash stockpile. So I think you've got to start some type of side hustle. Get a podcast. All you need is headphones and an internet connection to have a podcast. Get a website. Start doing some sort of hourly work, you know, freelancing, become a virtual assistant for a company. There's a million ways. And once you start realizing sort of what your skill set is and start being able to build a little bit of your network, it'll shake out what your more successful skills are that you can actually leverage monetarily, I think.
It's funny that you brought that up, because David has been a great mentor of mine over the last 4 years or so. And one of the things that he always talks about is, obviously you got to be the MVP in whatever it is that you're doing, right? But eventually, if you want to pass along wealth, you need to become the coach. You need to become someone mm-hmm. that not only knows all the skills, all the plays, all the disciplines, all the habits to be successful, but you got to know how to pass that along, right? That's not only important for your wealth, but it's just an important quality to strengthen as a leader. And in order to have mass impact in the lives and in the areas that you're most passionate about serving and supporting, you got to figure out how to, you know, communicate at a very high level and coach people into those kind of skill sets and those kind of opportunities for themselves. So I'm always thinking of being, you know, the player coach kind of analogy and mentality of, it's one thing to, you know, it's one thing to be a legendary quarterback, but one day, in order for you to pass on that legacy, you know, the best way of doing that is to coach and to give it to somebody else. It's the same thing you hear about all the people who, you know, lose all their fortunes after winning the lottery, you know, a couple years later, or how trust fund kids, you know, get all this inheritance and they lose it a couple years later. It's because they don't have the knowledge and the skills. No one coached them or trained them or passed that information along. So very important to master the skill set. Also important to be able to deliver it and duplicate it through other people, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, not to mention, I mean, I get really perturbed when people respond to the question, how are you, with, I'm busy. Have you ever heard people say that? They're like, how's it going? Oh man, I'm so busy. I got so much stuff going on. How are you? Oh, I'm up to here. I can't. I'm like, no. You're not really busy. Like, if you're the president of the United States, you might be busy. But yeah, right. Anybody else, we're just bad prioritizers. And so, you know, I would love to get people to start doing a not to-do list. Like, stop watching TV. Just stop. That's it. You don't have to do anything else. Just stop that one thing. And what's going to happen is you're going to fill it with something else that's probably more productive. So all the people who are like, no, but I can't get to the next stage, but I don't like my job, but I don't like my life. I'm always like, I totally get it. It's a really hard thing. Like, I have a lot of empathy for that. I've been there multiple times. And then I ask them, do you watch TV? And if they watch TV, I'm like, stop it. That's it. That's where you start. It's the simplest thing to stop doing. And it adds back hours to your day every day that you can use on an actual real pursuit that will build something. And nobody ever remembers the night you stayed home and watched Netflix. You remember the night that you went and did something crazy, that you learned something, that you connected with friends, or that you built.
That's a great, because a lot of people, they mistake movement for achievement, right? So that's a great one to, what's your number one thing that you want to stop, right? Maybe stop, pause this episode right here and identify. I talk about the start, stop, continue list of what things do you want to start doing, what things do you want to stop doing, what things do you want to continue doing based on your clarity and your goals and your priorities. But choosing one thing to stop right now can be such a powerful thing. Like you said, you know, by saying yes to TV, you're saying no to X. So by saying no to TV, you're opening the door to say yes to something else that might be more aligned with your goals, your vision, your future. So good reminder there. So as we kind of come into the tail end of the episode, what is your focus for, you know, 2018 and moving forward? Where are the big opportunities? Where's your time, your energy being allocated?
Sure. So my biggest focus is, I'm always interested in where are the trends that will probably happen no matter what. And you really don't have to be very intelligent to see these. You just have to kind of be curious and keep an eye open. So I'm really big on, you go where the growth is. If you want to play, you go where the game is played. You start watching, you sit on the sidelines, you start volunteering. And so I'm curious about trends right now, like autonomous vehicles. Like that's probably 100% going to happen no matter what, right? So this thing you're talking about now, blockchain, definitely something's going to happen with it. I'm not exactly sure what. I think you're going to see in our next phase cycle sort of a reemergence of the importance of angel and seed investing. This is one of the first years in which it's really gone down. So I think people are going to start seeing that the stock market isn't always going to drive all of your returns. You need to have hard assets like real estate that you invest in, but that costs a lot of money. And then you also need to have some Hail Marys, like startup investing. And so I'm really interested in where do those things sort of all come together. And so this year I'm looking for companies that play in any of those spaces that need investment. I'm really interested in fintech and what's going to happen in finance and how tech could disrupt it. And I think Andreessen Horowitz says it perfectly, the famous VC, that tech is eating the world. And so I want to be where growth is. And I think it is tech in some way, shape, or form. And so everything I do is figuring out how can we leverage this growth? How can we get around other people that are playing in this game too? How can we automate and outsource all the things that aren't productive but need to be done so that we can focus on these sort of like three standard deviation game-changing events? So that's what I talk about a lot on my website. And when I'm speaking, I want to be around those other strivers. I'm not very good at working with people on how to get drive and how to become motivated. That's just, I'm not that great at that, but I'm really good at when the people already have drive and they're already motivated, but they want to up level their success. They want to up level their company. Those are the people that I love really helping, because then we can create jobs for more people. We can create massive wealth. And I feel like, you know, the impact can be sort of 10 times.
So question to piggyback on that answer, are you more focused on creating impact, or are you more focused on generating wealth?
That's a good question. I'm terrible at compartmentalizing these sorts of things. What I've found is when I create impact and when I follow my curiosity, I can monetize just about anything. And so it really becomes what is worth creating, both from a monetary standpoint and from a does it interest me standpoint, and from it should it exist, should it be created standpoint. And so I think a lot of people in our generation, that's our struggle. It's not like how do we be successful, it's like which one do we focus on, what do we really double down on. So this year I'm following my curiosity, and I think that usually always leads to wealth and impact. If you're not striving only for zeros or driving for a nonprofit, neither of which I do.
Cody, you are an absolute rock star. It's always fun having a conversation with you. And I'm really glad that we got to connect at the One Life Fully Lived conference. And you were one of the keynotes there, and just absolutely not only an amazing message and track record, but just how you show up every day is very admirable. And, I always like to kind of wrap things up with, first and foremost, for all those that are listening that want to follow you, check out what you're up to, you know, see all your international endeavors and travels and adventures, in addition to your obviously keeping up with the financial trends and, you know, things that you're following, how can they best connect with you? What's the best platform to send them over to?
Sure. So I think it's probably my website, CodySanchez.com, and that's CodySanchez. I have an email newsletter on there, which if you're looking for funding, if you have startups, if you want to grow your startup, I'm really interested in how to help builders. Same thing with how to help career climbers. And that's very selfish because I love investing in those kind of companies. So, you know, I like to invest, I like to advise, and as you grow, I grow. So that's kind of how that works. And then obviously on Instagram and Twitter, those are where I'm most probably frequent, which is the same thing, just at Cody Sanchez on either one of those.
And we'll be sure to link up all of those in the show notes or in the show description if you're watching this on YouTube. So be sure to check all those out. And so final question, we always wrap it up, and you've kind of alluded to this a little bit, but I always love to hear the definitive answer. What is your definition of wealth?
Oof. My definition of wealth is getting to do the things I want to do, when I want to do them, where I want to do them, and with the people I want to do them. I can do those four things, then I think that's how I define wealth and ultimately freedom.
You guys heard it from Cody Sanchez. Thanks, Cody.
Well, that does it for this interview with Cody Sanchez. She's an absolute beast. I'm super grateful that she came on the show today. And if you want to connect with her, know that she's accessible. You know, this girl, she loves to serve and to have high-minded conversation and to talk through, you know, issues and challenges. And she's one of those people. I've seen her do it in person with hundreds of people at conferences. And you got a little taste of it today. But know that if you want to reach out to her on her social media handles or her website, all the links of anything she mentioned in the show or myself will be available at mattacheson.com in the show notes. Also, if you are, you know, watching this interview on YouTube, maybe you like to, you know, see that face-to-face interaction, what they're wearing, what they're doing, where they're at, and also just to know that, you know, they're human beings just like you and I, right? They've obviously done a few things right and continue to consistently do those things right. You can watch these interviews on my YouTube channel, Matt Acheson. And if you aren't subscribed yet, be sure to hit that subscribe button because I'm releasing a couple of videos each and every week. Obviously, these interviews every single Monday, but we have mindset vlogs, lifestyle, you know, tutorials and trainings, wealth building, all kinds of stuff here on the channel. So subscribe, tell your friends, share this with, you know, somebody that might get some value from it. And if you liked this video, give it a thumbs up here, hit that like button, as well as, you know, drop a comment below. Let Cody know a takeaway, a question that you might have. I always respond to questions. And if you really got some value from this and you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud, please do leave a review for this show. You know, this is the way that I continue to organically share this content. It's free. We want as many people as possible to access it because it's just that one thing, whether it's one conversation, one takeaway, you know, one aha that could change somebody's life. This was the reason why I started the podcast myself, was the one conversation I was invited into completely transformed my life and set me on a new path. And so if you heard something today or in a previous episode and you haven't left a review in iTunes, I would greatly, greatly appreciate if you did that so we can impact more people who really want access to this stuff, because you know this is stuff that isn't available to a lot of people unless they know how to find it. So with your help, we can do that. If you got questions for me personally regarding the episode, maybe you got a guest recommendation, somebody you want to hear me interview, feel free to tweet me at my handle on Twitter, official Matty Yates, the same on Facebook, it's the same on Instagram. I always love connecting with all the listeners and guests like you. So please reach out. It's always fun to connect. And if you are, you know, I'm constantly getting asked, will you mentor me? Yes, I do have one-on-one coaching for a few select clients, but overall, I have found that there is more value in collective mentorship, in your peer group, in your tribe, and the people you surround yourself with. I'm sure you've heard that some of the five people you hang around is usually the level of achievement and success you will have in your life. Show me your peer group, I'll tell you how much you're gonna make, right? There's all these different cliched statements, and they always go back to your, you know, your mentors and the people that you're spending your time around, the people that are speaking into your life, that you're learning from, that you're modeling after. And there is the ability to have millionaire mentors like Cody, like other individuals that I've interviewed on this show each and every month come and speak into your life. You can check that out at millionairementorsmastermind.com for more information there. Or if you just want the guide on maybe how to find a mentor, just text the word mentors to 44222 and it'll shoot you back a five-step guide on how you can find your next mentor. There's some key things that you're gonna wanna do and not do in order to find that right mentor for you. You can get that guide, mentors, to text it over to 44222, just the word mentors. So with that being said, I told you I had some fire guests coming up, especially some badass women, and being a father of two young daughters, I just love seeing, you know, women break these barriers that have, you know, these ceilings that have been held over them for so long. And my next guest is one of these individuals that's gonna blow your mind. It's probably one of my favorite interviews and episodes that we've done on the show just, you know, this really since the inception. So we talk about the overall topic of emotional intelligence. And this is something that if you want to achieve happiness, success, fulfillment in all areas of your life, you need to be emotionally intelligent. And Bonnie Kelly is going to blow your mind. So be sure to tune in next week. Fire episode coming up. Until then, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your March 2 million and beyond. Cheers. One of the biggest mistakes most entrepreneurs and small businesses make, not staying on top of their finances and accounting. Can you relate? Well, thanks to FreshBooks, this part of your business doesn't have to be a thorn in your side any longer. I think we can all agree, the working world has changed, and with the growth of the internet and today's new business landscape, more and more people are going into business for themselves, becoming small business owners and entrepreneurs. And FreshBooks is a premier accounting software that will simplify and organize all of these needs for you. FreshBooks and their all-new version of their cloud accounting software has been redesigned from the ground up and custom built for entrepreneurs and business owners just like you and I. It's ridiculously easy to use, and it's also packed with powerful features that make it so you no longer need to be a CPA or a financial guru to stay on top of your numbers. Whether you want to create and send professional-looking invoices in less than 30 seconds, set up online payments to get paid from your clients faster, tracking client invoices and accounting, the list goes on. FreshBooks has your name all over it. And the great thing is they're gracious enough to offer a 30-day unrestricted free trial to all my listeners. So go ahead and claim it. Just go to freshbooks.com/mindcast and enter Millionaire Mindcast in the How Did You Hear About Us section.